silence. And relax, Paul Simon, Heart Garth on Call, Siren 107.3 FM, Thursday the 15th of December, 11 days before Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. Other things that are actually happening there. And we actually have a dramatic incident, ladies. Yes, incident. Yeah, we thought Jane Clark launched us, obviously, talking about the Aintree Grand National Museum. Well, certainly horse racing and Essex and taking car parking spaces from citizens in Watford. Richard Fitzwilliams, his Golden Globes. They will resonate within history for at least 7 days. Aaron Craig's wonderful chocolate treat. Sarah Huntley's Christmas bauble. We thought, can it actually get much more impassive than that? Sarah Huntley telling us how she died in Wycliffe. You know, how to actually die forward, backwards.
Midsummer Murders.
She was in Wycliffe as well, of course. I don't think she died there, but she did die in Midsummer Murders. It has, because Ian Lennox has got a flood in his house. Oh, Ian.
Hello.
What? Share with us. This is the time, you know, forget the writing. We know genius writer of the 60s and the brothers and that, etc. We need you to share the pain, you know, because we might even drive up 160 miles just to actually help you out with this. What's going on, Ian? What's going on?
Well, I found that I've had a leak under my liner in the bathroom for an indeterminate amount of time, considerable time seemingly, because it's dripping now at quite a rate into my kitchen. But I thought that I'd have to take the floorboards up, but it looks like it's come from above the floorboards, which is a blessing in disguise, or a blessing of some sort.
Well,
I've got a plumber here at the moment, so I must warn you, has a belief that he can sing like Pavarotti.
Hey, that's what we like, singing plumbers. Yeah. You know, you see, as always, Ian, you're given some lemons, you make that lemonade. You know, you bring that thing in. You know, we knew that, you know, out of seeming despair and disaster, Ian Lennox produces a singing plumber, or a plumber who thinks he's Pavarotti.
He will not be thanking me if he starts to sing.
you don't think he's going to go into Nessun Dorma?
No.
Da 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 da.
Are you operatically trained?
Alex, that's a mellifluous sound.
Yeah, well, there we are. NAMDA trained, that's the bottom line. I know, Ian, you're with us third consecutive week, and we appreciate you being back with us because it's becoming the Ian Lennox part of the show, which is so essential. And inevitably, I can tell, like a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed bunny in the headlights, Ian's thinking, I wonder if this week, actually, one of Alex's co-presenters has actually read the net. You know, has she actually done it? Because, I mean, obviously, last week it was a bit too much to expect our lass from Gloucester, Natasha Turney, to actually work through that. She had to say, no, yeah, first year, etc. So, well, Jodie Orton, she's a writer, you know, so obviously as a writer, she wanted to sort of check it out. Jodie, have you?
Well, as Alex will attest to, I've had rather a challenging week, but if I can have it for another week, then, you know, I'm going to have a bit more time on my hands. Mm. So I did read up to the top of page 4.
Hey, you see that.
And if you can reassure me there might be... bit more kind of spying stuff and a bit less football, then I'll definitely
I had an ex-professional football reason. He complained of his erection.
Exactly, yeah. And this is my point. You see, this is it. I kind of got around about page 60 or so, and suddenly it all goes spy sort of scenario. Football goes on sort of thing. However, it does actually give you the opportunity, once again, Ian, of giving a random number to Jodie, and then she can pass it over for another mini sight reading from yours truly, just to actually sort of just... It's like a wonderful postmodern approach to actually book at bedtime, this. It's kind of like book at breakfast time, but in a totally random order, you know, a page a week in any particular selection that we've gone through.
Right.
Make your own story. What page would you like to go for, Ian?
I'm thinking the number 240 is going to my mind.
Oh, yeah, right.
I almost said 4 to see how far...
Exactly. I mean, Jodie, if you'd like to pass it over, I shall take that, the whole thing. I wouldn't want to risk, because, you know, there could be various words in there, and we have to just check this. And once Jodie actually starts...
I have been reading for 33 years, Alex.
once she goes through the effing and jeffing...
Not my book,
she likes to savour every word that's crafted from the whole thing. Okay, here we go. Give him a shock then, eh? Will do. Mike cut off the phone and placed it on the hall table. He didn't like the house. The floor, the walls, the furniture were all made of dark oak that seemed to absorb the light. Oakesley approached with a tray of cups. Tad and Dave approached carrying his bedroom door. Leave it inside. Mike moved quickly towards them. CTR, likely. The men laid the door to rest in the hall. Best start work on the windows first. He thinks we're double glazing. Tad and Dave shrugged and walked to the van. Mike turned to Oakesley. Are you wearing your jacket? Oakesley shook his head. It's heavy and sweaty. Mr. Mac glared at him. Which would you rather be, hot and sweaty or cold and stiff? Oakesley got the point. Mike made sure. You do realise that this guy could have killed you this morning as easily as blinking? Oakesley realised he'd been a fool and became surly. Joey said he'd want to get me back to the house. Half an hour earlier he might have done just that. He heard us, didn't he? Yes. Mike looked at him. With me, you'd have been dead anyway. Oakesley suddenly realised this man was from another world. How come? Plan B. Shotgun. Unfortunate accident. Mike looked at his man and saw that the words had hit their target. I'll get the jacket. A bit like I'll get me coat, really, in so many ways. And in the world of double entendres from Sarah Huntley, what better way could you actually have? Which would you rather be, hot and sweaty or cold and stiff? Ha 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 ha. Never mind. Ian, apologies for the delay. An exciting little moment there. Pass the book back to Jodie now.
Without putting into a context, they will not understand it.
Well, I'll try and do that.
Oakesley's beginning to realise that he's
under threat.
He's in danger.
Exactly, and he's brought in Joey, not Barton, just to make that quite clear, because obviously he's a Queen's Park Rangers footballer these days. But Joey, the ex-military chap, etc., the good guy in the book, who has actually got his friends in to kind of secure the whole system. And he's saying that if you happen to be chairman of a football club and you go wandering through the moors and a strange person comes up to you, you might be shot unless you've actually got yourself, you know, Protection. You know what I mean? Protection. And it's building up to a little climate. I did like the scene, actually, without giving too much away, that where Oakesley effectively thinks he's all right, he's in his little nest with his little mistress, and it's all safe, and he doesn't realise he's actually there, and then there's the moment where the mobile phone goes, and it's not who he thinks it is, basically, because he thinks Joey's gone away, and he calls Joey, and he panics, and that was nice. That was very cinematic, I thought, Ian, actually.
But anyway, it's a book where the problem with constructing the book was these two worlds, the world of the football man and the world of the spies. Mm-hmm. But it isn't as far-fetched as people thought, you know, because if you think about it, it is set in the 90s, and there was the time of the breakup of communism, and information must have been extremely valuable in those days to find out what people were thinking in various countries in Eastern Europe. And the people who had a legitimate reason to go to Eastern Europe were football people, because they had the UEFA Cups. So it was.
So we have the Europa League these days.
Yeah,
it's equally as exciting.
Well, yeah, but it's the same difference. That people had a legitimate reason to go. English people had a legitimate reason to go into Eastern Europe and to meet prominent people. And of course, that's why he was the chairman was attractive to the spy guy. He wanted information about what people were thinking and stuff like that.
Yep, precisely so. Amy, spying, football, sailing, trips to the Far East by yourself. Ever thought of writing a book?
No.
Get somebody to write it for you, really.
Yeah.
Ian's available.
More
for
like
very,
a bio, I think.
Very competitive rates. You could do a ghostwriting scenario on that point of view. Yeah, I mean, Ian, you have done some ghostwriting in the past, haven't you?
I've done lecturing on writing, and I also did some stuff at Sunderland University about newspaper writing.
Oh, right. No, you're wearing your journalistic hat. You know, I mean, those footballers' columns that are sort of obviously so masterly crafted by our wonderful sort of premiership players, etc. It's fair to say that they don't necessarily write all their own words, do they?
Oh, no, they don't.
Basically,
what happens is when I did it, it was a loose interview. The guy used to come in often with a theme of what he wanted to talk about, and you should develop from there. But the actual writing is done by the journalist as often as not. I mean, there will be some people who will do their own writing. They'll be quite articulate and, you know, a naturally gifted
like
people.
Like Joey Barton, obviously. Or does he just
Joey
quote
Barton's
from philosophers?
A strange guy. He seems to have... I mean, I've never met him, but he seems to be quite widely read. I don't know whether he's read the flying leaves or the books, but
It could simply be a case of he uses the internet. We don't know. If you're going to start quoting the delights of Nietzsche and various other sort of scenarios, who knows what could be happening? It's as strange as having Martin O'Neill in charge of Sunderland. Very, very strange, very weird, and just a little bit scary, it has to be said.
Why should it be strange for Martin O'Neill being charged with Sunderland? He was a Sunderland fan. Apparently he's got a Sunderland tattoo on him. I don't know where, but apparently I'm told.
You see, again, too much information here. And I mean, you know, there's a line which we have to sort of draw. And for Peter Lill listening to us in Lincoln, you know, Lincoln City, still not even in the league, you know, now non-league these days. Right. Yeah, exactly. So
now, what league they play in red and white? Is it red and white stripes?
They are indeed the Lincoln Imps, and as the fanzine motto goes, they are the deranged ferrets. Which is probably one of the reasons that they haven't had much success, really, because deranged ferret, really. It's just,
really?
It's just, yeah, I know. Yeah, we are. That's possibly source for the next book, Ian. You know, well, the deranged ferret and the magpie.
I have well, to.
Deranged ferret doesn't sort of give much hope of, an organised defence, does it?
No, but what excitement, you know, whilst you're actually watching that. What a system to actually have there. Forget the Christmas tree system, forget the diamond formation. Why not just go for deranged ferrets? Jody.
But going from one kind of lowly football team to another...
That's a bit of an insult to Newcastle United, isn't it, really?
No, I am going up north, up to the northeast.
Despite the
actually, reading your book did remind me of when I met the former chair of Darlington Football Club, George Reynolds.
Oh, yes, George Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him well.
Back in the day. In fact, it was just before their new stadium opened.
He called
me a bonny lass. So.
Let's just explain why, you know, because it is a story in itself, actually, without necessarily going into relationships, etc. But you used to actually have a fond relationship with a bloke who decided that his idea of romancing you was to take you to which Lord Forsaken grounds? Because he was a passionate Rotherham or Mansfield fan?
Darlington.
He was a Darlington fan.
He
was a Darlington fan. And so you'd find yourself sort of on dates going to...
Yeah. I have a claim to fame. I did faint at Feetham's once.
She fainted at Fleetham's.
Well, somebody won a corner kick.
Feetham's.
Yeah, no, we missed the Darlow goal because I fainted, so that was a bit of a sore point there.
I know we can laugh about it now, but at the time, I can tell you, there were emergency services. It was a nightmare. I mean,
there was a bomb scare as well, actually.
Mm-hmm. You would do anything.
I could write a book,
couldn't
I, about
to
football.
Get, exactly.
There's a bomb scare down in football club.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you're an average...
Well, the day that I fainted, I remember being in, the medical room. And vaguely, they were talking about there being a bomb hoax or something.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting a bit worried that they might think that I was some kind of planted distraction.
Decoy. It's a well-worn routine. In fact, I'm amazed that Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol hasn't actually due to the fact that, you know, somebody faints a football match and instantly that's a way to actually, you know, open up a whole range of bomb scares and so on and so forth.
That's the problem if you wear a really thick fleece when it's not actually that cold a day.
Clearly. Yeah, that's the important setup. Or as this chap might say...
Hello, this is John Craven, and glad you're listening to Siren 107.3 FM.
Isn't that nice of him? You know, everyone used to do news around. Do you remember when John Craven used to do news around, Ian?
I actually... I knew John Craven... slightly, anyway.
Well,
he used to work as a freelance in Newcastle when I was on the Evening Chronicle.
See, that's one of the reasons why he waited, you know, all those years simply to say,
"Hello, this is John Craven, and glad you're listening to Siren 107.3 FM."
You see, that's it. I can see that we bonded over that, you know, in all sorts of ways. I've never actually met John myself. Met Julia Bradbury. Prefer Julia to John, but there we are. It's a different line entirely. It's a country farm moment. Amy, any questions you'd like to put to Ian about life and times and how the singing plumber is thankfully keeping his mouth shut at this particular moment in time? But we don't know. He could start up any moment.
If I get the difficulties, I'll just give him a nudge and he'll put a pen in his mouth and I'll be off.
There we are. Actually, I've got to ask the question. It's a stereotype. Does he have a pen behind his ear, a little pencil behind his ear? Has he gone that far?
Sometimes I think he has. No, because he borrows mine.
Oh, right, okay. And has he used the words, "Phew, you've had some cowboys in here, mate"?
Well, as he's the man who constructed the bathroom, I don't think he'd be.
He could be schizophrenic. I just don't know. That, you know, what? Who? Where? Anyway, Amy.
Obviously, Ian, you've had, you know, stories of football and spy and things like this. How much research did it take to write this book?
Well, easy answers say lots. There's a lot of, once you get into it, there's a lot of books being written by investigative, I would say journalists, some of them, investigative writers, all about alleged corruptions in football. And once you go on the internet and you know how to search through Google with keywords and stuff, you find copious amounts of information. But you've got to use a judgment because when all's said and done, not a lot of this stuff has been proved. I mean, there have been major scandals every 20, 15 years, 15, 20 years. But the allegations are numerous. And in fact, in the book, there's a guy who shoots at somebody, a sniper rifle from a bridge in Prague. And about two or three months later, I actually was doing some research, some more research, and I found that there had been an Eastern European gangster who owned a football club shot and killed by a sniper. So, I mean, it was just about impossible to exaggerate the stories that were going on. And it wasn't... A thriller is meant, in many respects, meant to be an exaggeration of the truth, really, but this wasn't, seemingly, anyway. It was just
Ian, remember, truth, reality... two sides
fiction.
Of the same coin, stranger than, and so on. And
well, you're going through fiction you shall know the truth.
And you're going into cricket next. So,
yes,
I am. Clearly,
yeah.
With respect to Hansi Kronia on the one hand, and then Pakistani cheating souls on the other.
This is very different. It's set in the 1930s. It's more about the class system in England, which is like almost like a social apartheid at the time.
Well, it's still the same these days. I mean, you know, there are certain standards that we have for Midweek Drive presenters and Midweek Drive Morning Edition presenters, you know, as you're well aware, Ian, you know. We can't just have any sort of writers just coming in on the show, otherwise, you know, what's going on? You know, it's got to have a certain sort of relationship and rationale for the whole thing, a raison d'etre. Jodie, anything you'd like to... Because obviously as a writer, I mean, you know, you write yourself, so...
I do try. I'm an aspiring writer, I think.
What are you trying to write?
Well, I have been trying to write essays without much success.
Are you writing fiction?
Fiction, yes.
Right, what, short stories, long stories?
I did write a modern day fairy tale while I was studying over in the States, I think went down fairly well. I'm aspiring to write a novel, but I'm hoping to try and get on with that. But, you know, if you suffer from a bit of writer's block, have you ever suffered from that?
Not badly, no. But, I mean, that's, you know, it's just the look of the draw, that is. I mean, people like Flaubert, who's one of my favourite writers.
He's French, by the way,
George
in case you're wondering. Ian, I just sort of cutting in there because Amy was sort of blanking out again. Is that Flaubert, a very known French writer?
Flaubert.
I'm sorry, you must have heard him, yes.
Yes.
I wasn't speaking to us, the average...
No, it's pretty true, exactly. Carry on.
Good. Anyway, he wrote to Jean Sand saying that he agonised over one word for a whole day.
And George was a woman, in case you were wondering.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes.
I can quite believe it.
What I used to do whenever I sort of suffered this sort of thing was I used to write, I made myself write 500 words every day, a minimum, but I used to try to end before the end of a scene so I could pick it up when I started to write the next day and then go on to another scene. I found that helped me a bit. But everyone's got their own way of doing it. People have notes. my friend Arthur McKenzie, who Alex knows very well, he wrote a lot of episodes of The Bill and lots of other television things, which are by their nature episodic. So what he used to do, he had these little stickers, and he used to stick them on a big sort of plaque on his wall, and each sticker had a scene in it, and he used to put them, I think, in chronological order. But he didn't write them in chronological order. He used to look at the stickers and say, I think I'll write that scene today, and he did that way.
I may give that a try.
Or as Mike Dooley would say in our quote that we're using today, be still, stop thinking, feel, take action, visualise and repeat. There we go, you see. Be still, stop thinking, feel, take action, visualise and repeat. It's quite simple.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
Yeah, it works for him, I mean, people go for walks and things like that. What I have also found is that if you really get a major problem in a book, like a structural problem, it's best just to stop. And if you stop even for, say, for a week, you find that your subconscious has been working on it. Oh. And by the time that you readdress the problem, there's something happened. A solution just appears.
2 months ago, Amy Elise was almost beside herself with respect to, what am I going to do for my dissertation? I don't understand anything. What's going on? Have you settled that now, Amy? You
know I have settled it,
what is your dissertation going to be on?
It's going to be on backpacking, obviously, and it's just looking at the media and identity within backpacking and like the constructs of internet and things like that and how it's changed it.
There we are, Arthur. That's going to be an interesting little snapshot of the Amy Elise life from that point of view. And how's it going so far?
It's not.
Well, you've already
I've been doing research, so I haven't actually done any writing yet. But...
So you've had the advice, followed through, put it into practice.
Yep.
The magic will result.
It's ready. I'm ready for my New Year's writing now.
Yeah, I see. Have you ever done any backpacking, Ian?
Not at all. No. I've done some walking along coastlines and things.
But you don't really need a backpack. Well, I suppose you do. It depends on the wilderness of the bike. I mean, I am impressed with this, and I think Ian will be as well. Just share with us that route. Because you did this all by yourself last year, you know. No boyfriend, no kind of, you know, hassles from that point of view, no parents. You basically just said, I'm off to do...
I'm off to go around Southeast Asia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam.
This is exactly what I would have said. You know, I thought, you know, surely. I mean, because initially when you mentioned it, Amy, I thought, well, it's going to be two or three of you who'll actually be there.
No.
It's a safety number. But off you sort of went from that point of view.
And what happened? Any alarms? Any adventures?
My trip was actually very, very safe. I was quite lucky. I know I didn't have any of my stuff stolen. I didn't have anything of my stuff, well, not that I'm aware of, gone through. I didn't have any passport or visa problems or anything like that. So mine was actually very successful. But that just worries me for next time I go, because if nothing's gone wrong this time, something's going to go wrong next time.
Oh, Amy, you've got to be more positive on that.
No logical link to that.
No,
it's just part of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, see, maybe it's because she's from Watford originally. I don't know. It's a different line entirely.
When I was a young guy, I went off to France and lived there for a while.
Oh. I actually lived in France, yeah.
Have you? Where
she's done it, you know.
I lived in near Montluçon, in the Allier area, right central.
Oh, right, I was down by the Pyrenees.
Nicer area.
We could go into Ian's romance and the Pyrenees, and best not go there. I mean, what with that and the plumber and having to sort out things, he's got a Thursday to get through. He's got another 7 days. Jodie, last two questions for Ian Lennox, please.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Indeed, I have. Yes.
And can we look forward to connecting with you in the near future?
Yes, certainly.
Has it helped, Ian?
By that time, I hope you look on to page 5, mate.
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm aiming to get it's right the, it's to the end.
Because next week, of course, is the last midweek drive morning edition of 2011. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. So that's going to be my aim.
We're expecting some lemon tarts in the studio, or mince pies. So Amy's on the case for that. And Jodie, you will have completed the net.
I will. Well, I'm feeling quite good, actually, because I've just, as we've been talking on the radio, I've just come up with an idea for a book.
Oh, really?
It's a miracle.
Write it down.
I've written it down.
Not in the book. I mean, that was obviously right down a piece of paper. Graffiti over books. Don't you hate it when you get a book from the library, it's got all notes in, etc. Some people think it actually adds character to the book. I think it's still.
Yeah, I had a professor in America who said you should write in your books. You obviously not library books, all those belong to your professors. But
I bet she's written, must write a book about footballers and spies.
Well, you see, there we are.
So I can say one charming thing that I found about travelling that we used to do with our books is because obviously you do the book exchange, so you read your book and pass it on because it's too heavy to carry them all.
Yes.
And at the end, you read the book, and at the end of the book, you sign it, say what you thought of the book, where you read it, what date it was, and then pass it on to someone else. So when you get the book, you have like everyone else's comments and like where they read it and what they were doing at the time.
Sounds like a good idea to me, but I really struggle to part with books. So backpacking,
why don't you buy one of these electronic books? The technology now is so good that you can read. It's not backlit, and
your Kindles. You've got your various other things actually there. You've got all sorts of
book readers are available.
But how can you actually sort of make notes on your Kindle reader? How can you
pass
that on?
That's precisely what Judy Katz said to me.
You can take one notebook and one Kindle.
Well, there we have it. You see, one notebook, one Kindle, pass the notebook on. Job's done.
I'm quite interested by the fact that books, I think, over 100 years old don't have any copyright or something, so they're free or very cheap. Right. Yeah. So.
I think a lot of Dickens and. Yeah. For nothing, basically.
Well, exactly. There are moves afoot to actually sort out the copyright issues. I think they're moving it up to 75 years as well from 50 years as it stands. But
75 years from the time it was written?
No, I think from the time the author actually passed on. That's what
we're
trying to argue for.
Right, so that would probably... I'm I'm not sure when Dickens died.
Oh, he was in the last century.
Oh, that.
So, yes. In fact, he was beyond. He was
Of course he's 25. Yeah, he's 25 years old.
Please, outrageous, sir.
All of them, yeah.
Ian Lennox.
I'm still in the 20th century, me.
Ian Lennox. And a fine place it is, Ian. It's always nice to go time-travelling, you know, with our own flux capacitor on a Thursday morning, quite literally jumping across the generations to yourself, Ian. So I take it, Ian Lennox, he will return?
Yes, indeed. If only to speak to somebody who fainted down the football club out of excitement.
I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I thought that. I thought, no, please, you know, she's got a writer's imagination. But no, it genuinely happened. Amazing. But, yeah. Either that or meeting George Reynolds, one of the two.
Right. Could you see?